Hello everybody and welcome back to the Damage Report. I'm John Adirola, really special guest today. Over here at Emma Vigeland.
Hey guys, thanks so much for having me, John.
From Rebel HQ to TDR HQ, I guess. It's been a while since you've been in studio, so we're very excited to have you.
Yeah, again, thanks for having me, making me say it twice, you know.
Okay, and also it's great for you to be here. Anyway, she's doing a whole bunch of shows all week, some of which I won't be around to mess with her on. But the main show yesterday, the main show more this week, but also Happy Half Hour.
Yes.
Very exciting.
It's always fun for me to, you know, have a drink with Brett because he is quite a ridiculous human being, as everyone knows.
He very much is. Right. He gave a toast at my wedding. And it was definitely like a 5-minute stand-up thing he put together. Like as soon as he stepped up, you could tell he was picturing himself at like the Comedy Store or something.
Yeah, well, I feel like when you have that background, that's like the mode you're gonna step
into. The
go-to,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And you're also going to be on the Damage Report all on Thursday.
Yes.
So very exciting times there. Through the course of this hour, there's a lot that we're gonna be talking about. We're gonna be going over Mark Zuckerberg's secretive dinner with Donald Trump, the imminent release of the IG report and some of the damage control that's being put out there before it's even released. Updates on when you can expect food stamps to be a thing of the past. We're gonna check in with the billionaires in the Democratic primary. And we've also got a candidate, Anthony Thomas Jr., who's running in Nevada's first district, who we'll be talking with in just about 10 minutes or so. So you definitely wanna stick around with for that. But before all of that, let's jump into Trump and Facebook and the big mess there. We know now that Mark Zuckerberg had dinner at the White House, and we found that out because he said, you know, considering how important it is, how much scrutiny we're under, I just want to let you know that I'm going to be eating with Donald Trump. I'm kidding, news reports had to release it because they didn't want to say, and it wasn't released by the White House. It was totally secretive and incredibly important considering the stakes with Facebook deciding that they are going to stand apart from many other platforms by allowing paid ads with things they know are lies. They're gonna be profiting off those lies. Now, with this dinner being so important, personal one-on-one time between Zuckerberg and Trump, very interesting to know what it is that they actually talked about. So let's get into a little bit of a video of him being interviewed talking about that dinner.
You were in D.C. recently. It was reported later that you had dinner with the president of the White House. What was the nature of the meeting? Can you say?
Sure. I mean, we talked about a number of things that were on his mind and some of the topics that you'd read about in the news around our work.
So effectively, yeah, we talked about topics and things and also stuff.
Like how did you not know that this was gonna be a question that was asked of you? It's amazing how bad he is at this, even though he's been in this role for quite a long time. I did see The Social Network.
That's true, and that was a long time ago. That was like 10 years ago. But no, he's a robot, he's not a human. He can't do like off the cuff, like just being a person and understanding. Do you get why we would be really concerned about you having dinner with him, considering how he's exploited your platform in the past, how you're continuing to let him exploit it in the present? The huge amount of focus has been put on you, thanks to people like AOC, also Sacha Baron Cohen recently. Like that's a big deal. Maybe think about it a bit before your big interview.
Yeah, and look, I mean, clearly he had corporate talking points prepared, but he was not prepared for that very thing. I mean, news reports had come out beforehand. It's not like Gayle King, you know, had the exclusive and you know, burrowed under the White House to listen and figure out that they had this meeting. But in all seriousness, really, like the policy is so just broken. I don't think, you know, Twitter, I think, went too far by banning all political ads because the great Ryan Grimm, a TYT contributor, pointed out that someone like AOC would never have been able to win if it were not for Facebook ads because she wasn't able to afford television ads like Joe Crowley. So she actually was able to target her demographic and her constituents in New York, new potential constituents, to win and do it that way through viral ads. So I don't think banning it is the way to go, but the way that Zuckerberg is doing it is completely insane, and there are no standards, and he's acting like they're some tiny company. Oh, you know, we're just this mom and pop shop tech company, when actually you are a broadcaster for a variety of other companies. You're a conduit for media corporations. You control the revenue streams for so many companies and the output of who sees their content. This is the equivalent of, you know, like television as an, I don't even know, as like a company in itself, say that existed, right? Not having any standards, is like the FCC not existing. So I like what Google did, where basically they will take down things if they're demonstrably false or promote hate speech, but they'll still add political or have political advertisements. But once again, these companies should not be regulating themselves with this policy due to public pressure. The government should have some sort of standards in place.
Yeah. And especially at a time when you are personally benefiting financially, you need a good excuse. Because if you're like, oh, I just like free speech, while you're like shoveling money into your pocket, okay, I'm gonna be even more critical of the defense that you're able to put forward. And in the same way that I've often said, it's like personally offensive and insulting to me that if you're going to, in a different issue with the Ukraine scandal, if you're gonna say that it was just about fighting corruption, and week after week after week go by, and at the end of this like 2 month period, you still can't come up with an instance of corruption you were concerned about that didn't involve Joe Biden or Hillary Clinton, then you're telling me that you don't even care enough about your defense to make it plausible. In the same way, Mark Zuckerberg, I should say, his argument for why it's just free speech, man, and people should figure out for themselves hasn't improved after month of scrutiny. And that's partially because he's like, he's an asocial robot man, but it's also partially because I don't think he really cares. He thinks that he is beyond reproach or regulation, that the most powerful person in the country wants him to stay unregulated because Trump is benefiting. So why should he care what we think? But I do want to go to a little bit more of the questioning. Here he's asked about some of the particular things that they discussed.
Did he try to lobby you in any way?
No, I mean, I don't think that that's that. I think some of the stuff that people talk about or think gets discussed in these discussions are not really how that works. I also want to respect that it was a private dinner, Brennan's private discussion.
I literally could not care less about your private dinner or anything involving your private life. You have an unprecedented amount of control over the people inside of the US and indeed countries all over the world. You're having a secretive dinner that you tried to hide with the president, who is trying to allow you, or trying to have you allow him to continue to lie, to micro-target it. We have this weird thing in the country where the demographic that votes at the highest rates is also the most gullible and easily fooled on Facebook, and you are exploiting those people for profit to allow Donald Trump to lie to remain as president of the United States. So I don't care about your steak sandwich. I really don't.
Yeah.
I want to know if he was lobbying you, and your defense right there was juvenile. It was pathetic.
And suddenly, I love the chyron, whoever came up with that, you know, suddenly Zuckerberg cares about privacy. And just to
point, sorry, Zuckerberg, are you worried that I'm going to take all your private data and sell it to someone? That would be an infringement of your rights.
It might be, yeah, exactly. And just talking really about why he feels so emboldened, like the Democrats, really. I mean, I'm not going to try to say, oh, it's all both sides are equally bad. But the Democrats really cozied up to the tech industry for a very long time. You know, when we have these, this ability of major corporations to buy off our politicians, big oil, war profiteers, all of those people went after the Republicans more so. But the Democrats kind of had the market cornered with tech companies for a long time at their outset because they were seen as more benevolent actors. And now we're seeing that corporations, corporate power, unregulated, unfettered, it all corrupts in the end, and they're all going to fall back on the party that is going to actually regulate them the least, which is the Republicans. So Democrats perhaps maybe make a long-term solution by changing our campaign finance system so that you don't have to cozy up to the next corporation that's going to get so big that it's going to actually go to the people that will create profit incentives in a larger sense for them.
Yeah, and we have one more video which we're gonna show in just a minute. But before we get to this video, which is going to be about, again, why is it that you think politicians should be able to explicitly lie and you earn money off of that? Bear in mind this social media post, which I found to be really interesting, from Team Trump. Important, Facebook wants to take important tools away from us for 2020. Which, first of all, no, they don't. We want them to, they refuse to. But the only thing we're talking about here is not allowing you to knowingly lie. That's it. And you are talking about important tools.
And they said important twice. Like, so could have done urgent, then important again.
Why is it such an important tool for you that you get to spread things that you know are not true? Why do you have so little respect for your voters that you would try to hoodwink them? I mean, we know the answer, obviously. Now, bearing in mind that that's the concern that the Trump team has, that their ability to lie might be changed. Here is Zuckerberg on their policy.
What I believe is that in a democracy, it's really important that people can see for themselves what politicians are saying so that they can make their own judgments. And you know, I don't think that a private company should be censoring politicians or news.
But a small group of your employees, about 200, wrote a letter saying that they wish that you would reconsider because they said free speech and paid speech are not the same. Do they have a point?
Well, this is clearly a very complex issue, and a lot of people have a lot of different opinions. At the end of the day, I just think that in a democracy, people should be able to see for themselves what politicians are saying.
Even if the ads are containing false information, that's the issue.
I think that people should be able to judge for themselves the character of politicians.
No, but see, what they're being given on social media is what you're shoving into their face. And you're gonna be shoving it really hard if you're being paid to do that, okay? That's what they have. How are they gonna judge if it's true or not? For many Americans, it's whether they see it on social media or not. And if Facebook says, here's an ad, take a look at it, whether you want us to believe it's true or not, many people seeing that ad will think, well, it had to have been vetted. It's a paid ad. Your stamp of approval is on something that you know is false. That is what's going to influence people's decisions. And this isn't like social media was invented last Tuesday. I wonder what effect it's gonna have on politics. We know what effect it's gonna have on politics. And we know that millions of Americans will believe the blatant lies that Trump and other politicians will be telling them on Facebook. And you'll be just standing back saying, people are smart. They'll figure it out as you earn billions and billions of dollars. It's very convenient for Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, marketplace of ideas, especially when that marketplace is owned by Zuckerberg and the people putting out the ideas have a lot of money to give to Zuckerberg. Also, just lastly, the fact that he included his wife in this, why? It just reeks of corporate PR BS. And she's just staring at him like, yes, I hear every word that you are
saying,
human.
Which she was told to do.
Yes.
It's human.
Human. I am human. I mean, like, come on, cyborgs, let's get it together, guys.
Exactly.
They're the democracy's at stake while you pretend to care about democracy.
I had hoped by now robots would be cooler, but no. And yeah, in his, it's a complicated issue and people have a lot of different opinions. Nobody should ever say that again. Yes, that's true of literally everything, okay?
Right.
We don't need it anymore. But also, lurking in the background of all of this is, I keep saying they're going to profit off of these ads, and that's true. But that's not such a huge amount of money for what Facebook is to necessarily sway them. But that does not mean that they're not being swayed behind the scenes, because if Mark Zuckerberg believes that a progressive president could theoretically break up Facebook, which is something that's being discussed, but a Republican would not, that Trump would protect them from virtually all regulations, let alone actually being fractured into smaller pieces. Do you really think that he would not help Donald Trump to win re-election? That for all of his talk about free speech, he couldn't be doing this to protect his financial interests going forward in the future so that he could maintain his status as an incredibly wealthy person? No, no. For all we know, that's what the dinner was about. That Trump was saying, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, they're gonna break you apart, but I won't, I'll protect you, but only if you let me keep lying. He would have said it in slightly nicer ways, but he's an idiot, maybe not that much nicer. And honestly, the grotesque thing at this point is, I could declare today that I'm running for the Democratic nomination, and I could pay Facebook to run ads where I say that Mark Zuckerberg had a dinner with Donald Trump, and for an hour and a half, they talked about how they're gonna subvert democracy and throw the election for Donald Trump. And according to what Mark Zuckerberg is saying, they would have to let that be run. And millions of Americans could see the ad and believe that that has Facebook's stamp of approval on it. It is a sick, messed up system. And all of their arguments about why it shouldn't be changed are lies. Yes, it's complicated, but they're lying about how it's complicated. What's complicated are their ongoing business interests that could be imperiled if a progressive becomes president. Anyway, we're gonna take a short break. We come back, a candidate's gonna join us on the other side.
Yes.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, The host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Joining us now is a congressional candidate running in Nevada's 1st District, Anthony Thomas Jr. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you on. And so, look, I apologize in advance. We're going to totally get in your platform and everything, but there is one standout thing about your candidacy that is very interesting, and I know you're probably sick of talking about it, so I apologize. But, well, if you were to be elected, you would become the youngest person in Congress ever, actually significantly undercutting the current youngest ever, AOC, at just 25 years old. Even running at your age certainly stands out. And so tell me a little bit about that. What made you want to jump into electoral politics at a quite young age?
I think for me, like being in my community, I came originally from New Jersey and moved to Las Vegas. And I came here and I tried to pursue business, and I understood quick and fast that it's very difficult to make it by in today's economy and today's system. So, I started studying independently into politics, and I understood, man, like it's a systematic change that needs to take place for working class citizens to, you know, to get ahead in life. So, you know, that gave me my push to try to get into politics.
And so you were talking there about the struggle that you experience and that many people do to, you know, just survive in this economy. And one of the centerpieces of your campaign is a raise to the minimum wage. Can you give us the details on that and why you're prioritizing it as a centerpiece of your candidacy?
Yes, I believe a $15 minimum wage or even higher is necessary for our economy. I believe a $15 minimum wage puts money back in the pockets of the working class citizens. So when they have money, they can go out and reinvest it into small business, local businesses. And it just brings a huge burden off of their shoulders. I know firsthand how difficult it is to make less than $15 an hour as a full-time security guard. You know, I work very hard every day, and it seems like every dollar I get has to go to bills and rent. And, you know, I'm not able to save up and invest in, you know, like things I like to do. Like I would love to go on a vacation, but you know, there's no means to do that because my biggest priorities are trying to survive.
And a somewhat related issue, but talk to me about payday loans and some of the changes you'd like to make to the way that they're administered.
Yeah, in Las Vegas, there's no cap on payday loans. So the typical annual rate for a payday loan is up to 652%, which is astronomical. It's like almost a mob mentality. And I believe like to help working class families who are struggling to pay rent, they need to go and get a loan sometimes. You know, like not everybody can, you know, rely on their job to pay them on time every day. So when they go and get a loan, you know, the banks are gonna rip them off and say, hey, you owe me 652% in an annual rate. And I believe that cutting that in half is gonna bring power to the people because they won't be in fear of, you know, being ripped off by a bank.
Okay. Now, outside of some of these economic policies, what are some of the other main planks of your platform?
Another plank of my platform is I really want to tax corporations. I believe corporations here are running rampant and making billions of dollars in profit every year. And if you look at the Clark County School District here in Las Vegas, the district I'm running in, we're the 5th largest school district in the country, and we perform the 48th the number 48 out of 50 in the country. And I believe we need serious funding for our education system. And I believe a corporate tax would fully fund our education system and guarantee teachers' salaries at that.
Okay, and the current incumbent in the first district in Nevada is Dina Titus. What are some of the main differences between you and the current Democratic incumbent?
Myself, like between me and Dina Titus, you know, I lived in this community my entire life, in the working class community, that is. You know, like Dina Titus is a lot different. You know, she's made millions of dollars. You know, she takes money from Amazon. She takes money from MGM, Red Rock Resorts. Her campaign strategy is a lot different than mine. My campaign is for the people, 100% grassroots. Bernie Sanders' campaign in 2016 inspired me to understand, like, we don't need corporate money to run a campaign and inspire others. You know, we can bond together and build a strong campaign person by person.
You know, I only mention this because you mentioned Bernie Sanders, but your opponent, the current incumbent, endorsed Joe Biden. Are you planning on doing some sort of endorsement?
Yes, 100%. I want to endorse Bernie Sanders 100%. It kind of irritated me a little bit when I seen her endorse Joe Biden, especially because here in Las Vegas a couple years ago, the recreational marijuana was legalized, and Joe Biden obviously he feels different about medical marijuana. So that's where I'm kind of like confused why she would, you know, endorse Joe Biden instead of a more progressive candidate.
Now, if people would like to find out more about your candidacy, where can they go?
You can go to my website, anthony2020.com.
Anthony Thomas Jr., candidate in Nevada's first district, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you for having me, John.
We're gonna take a short break here, but don't go anywhere, because when we come back, really important breaking news in the Democratic primary after this. Dramatic breaking news in the Democratic primary. There are now one less candidate. We're down to 34. Kamala Harris is out, dropping out in early December. What month is it? December, early December. So breaking news came out just about 20 minutes ago. One of her staffers says, I don't think anyone on my team was expecting this. Really, not anybody? But it is really early, admittedly. Now, we know that there was a really critical New York Times piece about chaos in her campaign. The past few weeks have seen any number of write-ups about her Iowa strategy continually being thrown off, money going in, then money fleeing to other states where she thought she might have a better chance. So it certainly has been chaotic, but I would not have put any money on her dropping out anytime soon.
So yeah, so Dave Weigel just tweeted that, you know, she now that she's dropped out, she had actually qualified for the December debate. Now no people of color are going to have qualified for the December debate, or no women
None?
Of color.
Oh, no women. Okay, yeah.
Maybe it's not no women of color. Damn it, I'm gonna.
As of right now,
no people.
Just making sure. Yeah. Well, Buttigieg. That's it. I'm kidding. right. No, there's nobody. Yes.
But it reminds me a lot of what happened with Scott Walker in 2016, an establishment favorite who a lot of people thought would do really well. I thought that before I even worked here at TYT. I thought Scott Walker would do well because he had deep Koch brother money pockets. I also thought Kamala Harris would do well because she would gobble up all the establishment support while Bernie would gobble up the progressive support. Now she's dropping out really quickly, which is surprising. But often what did happen with Scott Walker in 2016 was he had all this donor money, he was flatlining in the polls, and he dropped out basically to save face and save that donor money. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if there's a similar dynamic with Kamala Harris.
Yeah. I mean, like my gut is, considering how young she is and ambitious she is, you combine those two things, she doesn't think that this is her last run for the presidency.
Right.
And as damaging as this run has been for any future run, actual vote totals in Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, whatever, would be worse. That might stick more. Like, she doesn't want to run in 2032. I don't even know if that's an election year. And then it's like, hey, remember when she came in fifth in Iowa and then came in seventh in New Hampshire? Like, she doesn't want that. that might be the reason. I don't know. There are certainly financial implications. It might be that she thinks it would be better for her to drop out early and throw her support behind one of the other candidates if she thinks they might become president. I mean, I don't necessarily think she's one who would want to like bolt for the VP slot or anything like that. But she might want to get in good with someone she thinks will become president. So there's a lot of different potential explanations.
Yeah, and also I'm sure that she's seeing that in her own home state, there's a very likely chance that she would not win in California, especially now that California has moved earlier in the primary process and is not going to be such a late surge. So that would be very potentially embarrassing early on in the vote totals. And I don't think she's going to endorse. I've been wrong on my instincts about her the entire time, but I don't think she's going to endorse quickly because I'm sure she's going to play a more calculated move and see how things play out. And I can't imagine being a sentient politician who says I'm going to throw my support behind Joe Biden at this point in the race.
At this point? And she's still in first.
And she's so publicly gone after him, I just can't see it. But then ideologically, who else would it be? Buttigieg? That's dumb.
Oh, yeah. But I have a hard time.
That would be a perfect marriage of insufferability.
Yeah, that's true. Look, if Buttigieg ends up like getting like first in Iowa, then getting a surge going to New Hampshire and getting second or something and starts doing well, I mean, I have a feeling he's going to have a rough month after that. But let's say he does really well. It's not impossible that in 4 months she endorses him. I just partially it's that photo I'm looking at right now. I can't imagine it, but it's not impossible. I still think it's more likely that she would support Biden. Maybe if Biden started to crater and then suddenly it was Bernie and Warren, maybe she supports Warren begrudgingly.
Yes, that would be a kind of likely scenario. But again, it would have to be between Bernie and Warren.
Yeah.
Okay. How the senators don't necessarily like Warren, the establishment Democrats.
Exactly. Well, probably more than Bernie, I would imagine.
Well, yes. That's if it comes down to that, of course.
The only other question then is, so now where does her support go? Now, I don't want to be like a D about it, but there's not a ton of support to go anywhere, but there's a couple of points.
A D about it.
PG, whatever, PG-10. So she's at a couple of points right now. Like recently, she was just eclipsed by Bloomberg. We're gonna be talking about that at the close of the show. But there's a couple of points, and that's not nothing. Where do we think that those points go?
Well, Buttigieg, right?
Yeah.
Biden, honestly. But there are a lot of girl boss, not smart Democrats, who vote based on identity.
You're being a D about it.
I'm being such a
D. So they go
to Warren.
Really? You think Warren?
Well,
okay. You don't think the search for Klobuchar?
Oh, man.
She doubles to.
We're talking about
three?
Charisma, lack of it. Michael Bloomberg, Amy Klobuchar, kind of tied.
Right now, Bennett's just rubbing his hands, thinking he's going to get a few. I think Buttigieg is going to pop up a point. Maybe Warren's going to get a point, and then that'll probably be it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, the debates will be a little bit less spicy, I guess. And we're certainly going to have more like post-mortem over the next week or so about why she dropped out as early as she did.
What will Tulsi do? Who will she go after?
Buttigieg might have a rough debate, I guess. Ugh. We'll see. You never know. But anyway, we do have to take another break. When we come back, lots more news to get to. If you've been watching Fox News, going to Breitbart, things like that over the past year or so, you've probably been on pins and needles on the edge of your seat waiting for this IG report, which you have been told will absolve Donald Trump of everything, prove that the deep state has been targeting him. Every conspiracy theory that you want will suddenly come true in this IG report. But now, with just like a week to go, suddenly the talking points are changing a little bit because some leaks are starting to come out indicating that it will not be as supportive of Hannity's fantasy worldview as you have been led to believe. People familiar with the draft language of Horowitz's upcoming IG report said that while it was critical of some FBI employees and found some systemic problems in surveillance procedures, it overall does not agree with Trump's charge that the investigation was a witch hunt or a politically motivated attack on him, first as a candidate and then as president. Instead, the draft report found that the investigation was open on a solid legal and factual footing, these people said. And so now it's the 9th, I think it's coming out. So we've got about a week suddenly there's a bit of damage control. What can be salvaged from this report that was supposed to totally absolve him?
Yes, when I went to the Trump rally, this was all they could talk about.
The upcoming report?
Yes, they were like, it's gonna tell us everything. Now we'll get our side.
And it's the like Democrats Return of Skywalker.
I know.
Rise of Skywalker.
Well, yeah. Hopefully that movie, which I am going to see on the Thursday opening night, is better than what this report has and has juicier content.
Yeah, more C-3PO anyway.
Yes, I mean, that's your thing. But I thought you meant.
I'm gonna have to think about that for a bit.
Forget it. But yeah, no, it's just fascinating because like, why are we even wasting our time with like these little nitpicks of how this is gonna absolve Trump? We know it's because the right wing is making these conspiracy theories and saying that this is more important than it is. We already saw the report. We know what went down, and I don't think that we're going to get any juicy information from this at all, which should probably go without saying.
Yeah, what's going to happen is they're like, yeah, we had some good reasons to believe that there was something going on, and so we looked into it, which is literally our job to do. And no, it wasn't that Lisa Page like turned in bed one day to Peter Strzok and was like, you know who I hate? Trump, let's get him. Like, that's not actually how anything works.
Yeah, they think this is like some sort of house of cards, but like a really bad version of it, where there's all this, you know, political espionage behind the scenes. And it really is as straightforward as it gets. They investigated, this is what they found, here we are.
Like, the FBI and the CIA are not trying to overthrow the democratically elected leader of the US. They're trying to overthrow all the other ones.
Yeah, in
this
fact,
is the one they're not trying to overthrow.
In fact, Trump's helping them
exactly.
Right now in Bolivia. They're working together, so it's not like, well, we unsubstantiated. But I mean, come on, like this is to think that the CIA specifically has it out for this right-wing president when a right-wing president only furthers the CIA's agenda and law enforcement that has absolutely no safeguards in place. That's perfect for what they want to do. So there is no internal kind of conflict here or what do you want to say, conspiracy.
Yeah.
But the only thing that these Breitbart fanboys have to rest their hats on is conspiracy theories, because if they look at the reality, if they look at the horse in the mouth, is that the right phrase? They will see something that's quite unpleasant.
Yeah, there's a mixture of a couple of sayings there.
It was a mix.
There's gift horses too.
Why do I
bear in mind the gift horse?
Try for it when I don't have the confidence.
I like, you know, like swing for the fences.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe you'll miss the ball, but maybe the bat will fly out there pretty far. So anyway, that's
good
a sports thing.
Reference,
thank
John.
You. Yeah, I probably did that at one point. Okay, so how is Trump going to respond if what we're hearing about the IG report is true? Well, asked how he'll respond specifically about if it shows that the FBI was justified in investigating him, he said, the IG report is a very important report. If what I read is correct, that will be a little disappointing, but it was just one aspect of the report. So wait, the core finding that the FBI was justified in investigating you is just one aspect of the report. It seems kind of like an important part because look, search on Trump's Twitter IG report. He's tweeted over a dozen times specifically about IG report. You can try other variations, I didn't. But he's very much anticipating or had been that it will show that this was a conspiracy, a witch hunt to take him down. That's not one aspect of the report, that's the entirety of what they've been talking about. He goes on to say, we'll see what happens. It's coming out in a few days. I hear it's devastating. He implies still that it's gonna be devastating for Barack Obama, who supposedly wiretapped him, for the FBI, for Comey, for Strzok, for Page, sorry, the lovers, Strzok and Page. And anyway, some people aren't ready to give up on this thing. I believe this was last night, I apologize. I think it was last night. This is Sean Hannity's graphic. Panic at the deep state is his sidebar graphic. And so he still thinks that the deep state, which they're running with, it's been years now, they still got that, is going to, like, it's going to be proven. All of it was there. All of the witch hunt, all of it.
Yeah, I find it interesting that Sean Hannity is leaning into the deep state stuff as someone. So you're now critical of our national security establishments that are unfettered when you were a major cheerleader for that during the Bush era. But now that it's fit your conspiracy theory audience's narrative, now you're going down this path. It's like. No matter what it says, they're going to say it was devastating.
Of course, yeah. Like, nothing matters.
Nothing matters. None of the fact that they'll like do a crossword puzzle and like fit different letters together to make it say conspiracy against Trump. Like that's what it is. It's all it's all just a conduit for them to feel emotional about their president and follow him to the ends of the earth.
Yeah, and look, if you think that Emma's wrong, there are still people following the whole Q thing. Still, after all this time, so many failed predictions.
I'm Q.
For all we know, you could be. Honestly, prove that she's not Q.
Guys, I am Q.
When we go Emma, we go all, or whatever. Anyway, one other thing, this is gonna be a big shocker for you. Attorney General William Barr has told Associates he disagrees with the Justice Department's Inspector General on one of the key findings, that they were justified investigating him. So after this long, exhaustive thing, he's gonna come out and he's gonna put out his own letter, I guarantee it, saying that he, the guy who did not look into this, still asserts that they were not justified in looking into Trump, even though the independent body that thankfully in this case he can't override have shown that they were justified. And proving once again that he is not there to be the IG. He's there to be a twin of Rudy Giuliani in an incredibly important position in the government, serving as the personal lawyer to Donald Trump, which is not the point of the attorney general. Anyway, we're gonna take one last break. We come back, we're gonna touch base with the billionaires of the 2020 Dem race after this. Democratic primary now has multiple billionaire candidates, and there are a couple of groups and people who are not happy with this. One is the vast majority of voters who have no interest in them whatsoever. The other, Bernie Sanders, who tweeted this: if you had a couple billion dollars, you could announce your candidacy for president and be taken seriously, even if you were the dumbest person on earth. Billionaires should not be able to buy our elections, and we're going to change that. And so look, obviously on the policy implications there, couldn't agree more. And Emma, we've talked about Steyer the last time you were on. It is really frustrating. Even Steyer, who's good on some of the issues, good on climate change or whatever, the fact that they can just say, yeah, I'm gonna spend, like Steyer's, I think he's spent like 40% of all the ad money for all the candidates was him. Bloomberg says he could spend $1 billion in this primary.
And he's already spent tens of millions, and someone tweeted that that would be the equivalent of $39 for an average person. So he's just like, you know, it's like he bought a sweater at J. Crew.
Yeah.
Like that's what it is for him, just spending money on this. And like what is gross about this though, is you know what Bloomberg could do with that $39 equivalent of money, or Steyer, or all of these billionaires or really rich people? Donate it down ballot and actually make a difference in this, in these races, and turn seats blue. Whereas we have candidates on the Democratic side scrounging and scrapping for money, where these billionaires were just going on ego trips and running for president. Although I think Steyer's authentically trying to run for president.
Yes.
What I think Bloomberg is doing is this is a threat to the Democratic voters and the Democratic establishment and apparatus. If you nominate Sanders or Warren, I'm gonna run as an independent, and right now I'm putting the infrastructure in place and laying that groundwork to do so and run as a spoiler. I think that that could be actually the legitimate purpose of his candidacy right now.
I honestly respond much in the same way that, like, on the other side, when they're like Gabbard's definitely gonna run as a third party candidate, I'm like, I don't fear a third party candidate right now, considering the stakes. And I know that the stakes normally make you fear it more, but I don't. Mike Bloomberg is a third party candidate. I don't think a ton of Americans are gonna be like, I could support him and maybe get 4 more years of the guy I hate more than I've ever hated a politician. Sure, I'll support Mike Bloomberg. I just don't see it happening. Yeah, maybe he'll take 1% or something. Gary Johnson took 4%. Like, there's always gonna be the third party candidates that get a couple percentage points. I'm really not that worried at this point. Maybe he will. I'm more worried about the effect he'll have in the primary, I guess. Because he will be spending a ton of money. And I can tell you one way he's already having an effect. Bloomberg is targeting more than 840 search terms that specifically reference climate, with hundreds more that reference climate adjacent terms. So this is basically Google Ads. When you search for things that have to do with climate change, and when I say have to do with, it's a broad definition, hundreds of things you could type, his ads will come up. Not one of the candidates who are really strong on dealing with the climate crisis, that support a Green New Deal, things like that. Instead, you're gonna see campaign literature having to do with Mike Bloomberg. And as you pointed out, that's like a buck out of his pocket. He doesn't care. He could buy that up and it doesn't matter to him at all. And so he could easily crowd out the online ad space across everything if he wanted to. And that's the only person you'd learn about. That would be pretty, I think, effective in helping to shift this primary.
Yeah, I mean, this is the natural progression of having a campaign finance system that is run privately, right? So you have corporations and very rich people having an insane amount of influence on our electoral politics. And you have people with charisma like Mike Bloomberg, not traditional, not politicians who would succeed in any other institutionalized framework, able to actually make a legit run at this just purely because of the money they have in their pocket.
Yeah. Yeah. And even like, I agree with you that like, I basically put it Steyer, Bloomberg, Schultz in terms of billionaire power rankings, in terms of like how serious they are and how not purely driven by liquefied evil. Tom Steyer actually seems to think like, hey, I have the right, you know, like I have the right positions on some important issues, so I want to run. But even Tom Steyer, like he's there because he had the money. He just qualified, by the way, for the December debate. He had to get 200,000 donors. And we've talked previously about the way he does that. It's basically a con. It's like you donate this money and you get the money back. Like he's basically buying donations to qualify for the debate. And that is definitely not supposed to be how it works. It's supposed to be a measure of organic support for your candidacy across a huge number of people across a number of different states. And a billionaire can show that, no, we don't have to do that. I can just set up this website that like people donate, then they get the money back. It doesn't count for anything, but it qualifies technically.
And can you just imagine for a second how personally frustrating it must be if you are someone who literally scratched and clawed like Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, who was a law professor and then authentically made a run, or it, like even the candidate that I don't think is like that good, Cory Booker, right? Like legit candidates who really came up through the political process and kind of paid their dues. To see someone like Steyer, like, yeah, I'm just gonna make a run at this. Like Steyer maybe outpolling someone like Booker. How infuriating that must be for people like that. I don't know. It's just a thought. But I mean, the reason I kind of push back and I do think that him running as an independent would be very scary is because he does have political experience and credibility on that issue, even though I do think much of his tenure as mayor of New York was disastrous, racist policing, gentrification, all of those things.
Yeah.
A ton of that.
You could be right.
But, you know, there populism in this era, if Bernie Sanders is the nominee, we would really have to go all in behind him because there are older voters, and we're seeing that this with the Biden coalition, the people who aren't going away, that are scared of that brand of populism. And I think if Bloomberg ran, those voters would go to him, and that's not an insignificant chunk. So I just want us to all be clear-eyed about this because we need a progressive agenda, but the establishment is very strong in its opposition, and that could be some way that it manifests itself.
Yeah, well, theoretically, they should also be just as strong in opposition to an independent run by Mike Bloomberg, if that throws the election of the Republicans. And so,
but they would rather have a Republican than Bernie, I think. A lot of the establishment. They would rather have.
I've never really agreed with that. I understand that they think Bernie's wrong, but they also would probably think, you know what, we could probably control him, I bet. It's easier, like with Donald Trump, they get nothing for 4 years. Yes, maybe they get tax cuts, the benefits, and whatever. Anyway, that's a longer conversation. I've never really agreed with that. But anyway, you have swayed me to some extent on the Bloomberg thing. So here is what needs to happen. We had early on, hey, Bernie Sanders, you better not run as a third party candidate. If you're gonna be in these debates, you're running as a Democrat and that's it. More recently, Tulsi Gabbard, all of these talks on MSNBC and everything. Is she just gonna run as a third party candidate? Okay, well, here's Bloomberg. You make a very good case. Maybe he is just setting up a third party run. I want, let's see, I want Chuck Todd talking about it. I want, who's the, I never remember his name. Jake Tapper, you next time you have him on, ask him, are you gonna be running? You need to be clear, are you gonna be running? Remember, they're all supposed to be signing a pledge saying that if they're gonna be in these debates, that's the only run they're gonna make. I wanna see his signature on that pledge. I want the DNC officials grilling him about that. You need to take it just as seriously as you do with Bernie and with Tulsi Gabbard, if that's actually a fear that you have.
Yeah, I agree, but the fear is not, you know, a third party run that would spoil someone like Pete Buttigieg, right? The fear, or Wait, it's the other way around. The fear is not a third party run that would spoil someone like Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, although to an extent I think they'd be happier with Warren. The fear is a third party run that would have spoiled someone like Hillary Clinton. That's really where they're actually freaked out about.
Exactly.
It.
Well, look, I would appeal to their, like, we only have 30 seconds. Okay, so if you are a DNC official, someone in the Democratic establishment that thinks, hey, maybe we just get 4 more years of Trump and we can last, I will say to you what I said to the people that thought the first 4 years of Donald Trump would be totally acceptable. How would you like a 7-2 Republican dominated Supreme Court for literally the rest of your life? If you're in the Democratic establishment, you're not gonna survive to see a balanced court again. So if you're actually thinking that, you need to snap out of it right now, because that is apocalyptic, suicidal political strategizing. It has already been thrown for literally decades to the Republicans. The idea that we would cement that for generations is insanity, and we need to push back against it. Thank you so much for being on. Great to have you here.
Thank you.
And you're gonna be here Thursday as well.
Yes, can't wait.
Yes, so very exciting, so you're definitely gonna tune in for that. Thank you everybody for watching. We will see you tomorrow morning.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.